three Selma to Montgomery marches in 1965 were part of the Selma Voting Rights Campaign and led to the passage that year of the Voting Rights Act, a landmark federal achievement of the 1960s American Civil Rights Movement. Activists publicized the three protest marches to walk the 54-mile highway from Selma to the Alabama state capital of Montgomery, as showing the desire of African-American citizens to exercise their constitutional right to vote in defiance of the segregationist repression. Most of the millions of African-Americans across the South had effectively been disenfranchised since the turn of the century by a series of discriminatory requirements and practices. Finding resistance by the white officials to the intractable, even after the passage of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which ended segregation, the group DCVL, which is Dallas County Voters League, invited Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. and activists of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference to join them. They brought many prominent civil rights and civic leaders to Selma in January of 1965. Local and regional protests began with 3,000 persons arrested by the end of February. On February 26th, activist and deacon Jimmy Lee Jackson died after being mortally shot several days earlier by a state trooper during a peaceful march in Marion, Alabama. The community was sorrowed and outraged. The first march took place on March 7th, 1965. Bevel Amalia Boynton and others helped organize it. The march gained the nickname Bloody Sunday after its 600 marchers were attacked at the Edmund Pettus Bridge after leaving Selma. State troopers and county posse attacked the unarmed marchers with billy clubs and tear gas. Boynton was one of those beat unconscious. A picture of her lying wounded on the bridge was published and televised around the world. The second march took place on March 9th. Troopers, police, and marchers confronted each other, but when the troopers stepped aside to let them pass, King led the marchers back to the church. He was seeking protection by a federal court for the march. That night, a white group had murdered the civil rights activist James Reeb, a minister from Boston, who had come to Selma to march in the second march, which had been joined by many other clergy and sympathizers across the country, namely Archbishop Yakovos of the Greek Orthodox Archdiocese of then North and South America. The violence of Bloody Sunday and of Reeb's death led to a national outcry and some acts of civil disobedience, targeting both Alabama state and federal governments. With Governor Wallace refusing to protect the marchers, President Johnson committed to do so. The third march started March 21st. Protected by 2,000 soldiers of the United States Army, 1,900 members of the Alabama National Guard under federal command, and many FBI agents and federal marshals, the marchers averaged 10 miles a day along US 80, known in Alabama as the Jefferson-Davis Highway. The marchers arrived in Montgomery on March 24th at the Alabama State Capitol on March 25th. With thousands having joined the campaign, 25,000 people entered the capital city that day in support of voting of civil rights. The movie Selma has hit the box offices recently, reminding us of the famous events in Selma, Alabama in 1965 in defense of civil rights. Today, many Orthodox feel pride when they see the cover of Life magazine featuring our Archbishop of blessed memory, Archbishop Yakovos, standing boldly beside Martin Luther King Jr. This picture has been shared all across Facebook and throughout the world. But Greek Americans were not as excited 50 years ago. We have asked His Eminence, Archbishop Dimitrios of the Greek Orthodox Archdiocese of America, to speak with us today on this historic event and his personal reflections as a church leader. Welcome, Your Eminence.
Hello, Father Chris.
Thank you for taking the time. I know that you have seen the movie Selma, so I'm wondering if you could share some of your reflections and impressions on it.
Yes, I have seen the movie when it was presented in a special presentation here in New York. The producers and the people that were the protagonists of the film, they were present. They made an appearance in the theater that is completely filled with people. So it was a special impression not only to see the movie, but also see the people who were instrumental in producing it. Mm-hmm. The movie is impressive, as we saw it. It is impressive because it depicts in a serious way, and I would call it, using an academic language, an objective way. There are no exaggerations there. There are not special colorations so that you create an impression. It's really a matter-of-fact kind of presentation. The characteristic of my movie is that it presents the whole movement and the whole effort by the Reverend Martin Luther King as a strictly and exclusively and strongly peaceful. It was obvious that he did not want violence. And that was clear in the movie. The movie comes out very clearly. Especially there is one of the four most, I mean, there are many scenes there, but in one of them is a big crowd of people led by Martin Luther King going to cross over a bridge. On the one end is a crowd marching silently and carefully. The other end is the police and the people of the state. And at some point, the police receives the order to just open and let the people cross it. And at the very same time, Martin Luther King stops with the crowd and says, no, without saying anything, turns around and takes the way back. He said, we don't, now we have seen that we could go through, but we don't go because we know that things might happen there in terms of violence. That was a critique after that. But the scene is tremendously impressive. And it conveys this idea that we don't want to have in any way violence as a means of overcoming what he was saying, as we will overcome the conditions of racial discrimination. So it has been really an impression of the film, positive and appreciative of a movement that at least it showed very clearly this non-tendency for violence.
There was an exchange during, I don't know if it was exactly what happened, but there was an exchange when the man there, the actor portraying Archbishop Yakovos, approaches Martin Luther King Jr., and Martin Luther King says, "You came." And the then Archbishop responds, "You asked me to come." And then there is that profound scene, as you mentioned, Your Eminence, on the Edmund Pettus Bridge, when everyone is there. I don't know if they kneeled at that point. They probably did.
And they kneeled.
Kneeled. Okay. And then the Archbishop kneels with him, holding his ingolpio, holding his staff. He must have been, I would think, then the senior prelate or the senior clergyman. I think he was recognized throughout America as the senior prelate then within the Christian faith. Does that ring a bell to you? Yes.
Absolutely. And I was, one of my curiosities aspects was to see how the filmmakers, they would treat the presence of Archbishop Yakovos. And I think it has been treated very properly. Because they show not only what has been famous now through the picture on the cover of Life magazine, having the Archbishop marching with Martin Luther King, but having other segments in the film in which one of them was the one mentioned, in which you have they show the Archbishop. So that's very important, and it conveys a message. And you mentioned something, that the difference between the then and the now. What happens is that by the passing of time, our community became more and more, of course, aware of things. After all, the Greek Orthodox community in its initial phase of their life in the States, they went through terrible difficulties and sometimes even strong discrimination. So they had the experience. But now it's stronger than that. And I would like to tell you, for instance, we have been, in a few years back, we have been in Memphis, Tennessee, for a meeting of leaders of our Orthodox Church, and I have to tell you that we visited the place of the assassination of Martin. It was part of it. We spent quite a time to visit the place of the assassination, and we invited one of the people who seemed to have been part of people escorting Martin Luther King. He came and gave a full speech with question and answers. In other words, a considerable time of 1.5 days in Memphis, Tennessee, was taken up by just dealing with the assassination and the civil rights movement. Mm-hmm. So that shows the a very strong awareness now of the issues of civil rights.
That picture is, of course, indelibly embedded in many people's memory. As I have to say this, that the picture of you, Your Eminence, when you traveled to the World Trade Center, when the towers were lowered by the terrorist attack, and you blessed the helmet then of the soldier that bent down and kneeled down in front of you, those are things that are indelibly embedded, at least in my mind, and I'm sure others, when they see the church responding to most difficult situations. Many of our listeners were still babies or not even born in 1965, but you were already a graduate student, University of Athens School of Theology, ordained priest. Where were you during the height of this so-called civil rights movement in America? Can we go there for a minute?
Yeah. How to put it, the connection in terms of knowledge and awareness of the specific movement here started in the early 60s because there were signs already. And I remember very clearly being in Athens sometime, it was in 63, 64, it was in a condition of a lecture at Goethe Institute in Athens in German. Mm-hmm. And we were there with a number of other people. And I remember they started talking about this kind of situation in the United States. In fact, one of them had brought an issue of Time magazine. And we said, now we are here listening to a German lecture, and this is someone who brings... And he said, yes, he said, because this is an important issue. What happens with the racial situation here in the States. So then, from then on, I somehow became more and more knowledgeable and informed about the racial condition here in the States. So when I came to the States in 64, and then from 65 on for 7 years, I was as a doctoral student at Harvard University. That was really something very strong in our, daily discussions and things. It was among the very important issues. And, you know, this time also coincided with other things. It was the Vietnam things. There were, in other words, especially in the universities, that was a very strong kind of awareness of things of tremendous importance that have to do with human rights, discrimination, racial discrimination, and other similar things. So we really lived in a quite revolutionary time, I must tell you.
Yes. No, that was. I remember the 60s. I was in my teen years, and I remember constantly hearing about revolutions and protests and things. So it was a turbulent time. The other thing that's come up, Your Eminence, I mean, leading up to Martin Luther King Jr. holiday, we've posted several articles on OCN concerning Dr. King, the civil rights movement of the 60s, and some of our listeners are discussing the church's participation in politics, quote-unquote. Is a defense of civil rights a moral or a political issue? Now, the Orthodox people, as you know much better than I, have not been... absent from any kind of persecution. There's always been some type of persecution, some extremely brutal upon the Orthodox Christians, primarily the Greek Orthodox. So can we relate to this a little bit, the issue of a politic, a civil right, a moral issue, Is there a problem, or is it something that really needs discernment and a defining better?
Well, first of all, I would like to congratulate you and commend you for developing, let's say, a condition of participation by the people in the issues of related to what Martin Luther King did and the whole issue of racial or other discriminations. So you did, you opened the forum, and I would like to congratulate you. That's an important thing. Now, there is, of course, a tremendous interest in the issue. Is it a political or a moral issue? Or today, I would say, or even a religious issue sometimes, because sometimes you have the religious factor in some of the tremendous conflicts that happen these days. Middle East and even Paris, France might be indicative of that. So it's a mixture. I don't think the issue is purely or only or exclusively political. One cannot defend the thesis that the issue is moral, exclusive and only. It's mixed. It has both. And I said it's political, moral, and religious issue, as it happened with the now development beyond the racial thing, what happened with the ISIS and the Al-Qaeda and these Islamic issues, etc. So now the Orthodox people have a tremendous, dramatic, for centuries experience of persecutions, exploitations, occupation as countries. So it's a martyrdom, let's say, persecution is something inscribed, engraved in the blood of the Orthodox people. It's in our DNA, in other words.
Yes.
And that perhaps, Father Chris, if I may offer a side of the observation, that perhaps explains why there is in among the Orthodox a very strong recognition, even adoration of the martyrs. The martyrical, the death by persecution and the execution because of faith and because of ideas is something really so bread and water, let's say, for the Orthodox people, especially the Greek people, but also in general the Orthodox people. Not to talk about the millions of martyrs. In a recent statistic, I was absolutely surprised to read that in the 20th century, from 1900 to 2000, in these 100 years of the 20th centuries, there have been 30 million people executed because they were Christians.
My goodness.
I mean, it's an amazing number.
And this is
an official. It's not something someone said something, which was not here in the in New York. The last month we had it was a St. Patrick's an opportunity by the Ukrainian Orthodox people. They asked, and the church was given to them, to have a memorial for the 10 million Ukrainian Orthodox that were executed under Stalin. In various ways. So we are very familiar. Greece, First War, Second War, after that, the conditions that followed. Again, the very same. Middle East. So, and today, who are the people who really suffered to the point of extermination in the Middle East? Let's say Iraq, Iran, Syria, Palestine, Egypt, the Christians.
Yes.
So we are, especially Orthodox Christians, we are very, very familiar. And this is why for us it's even beyond the classification of, let's say, issues of equal rights or civil rights or rights of freedom, like what happens with our ecumenical patriarchy, freedom of religion rights. All these kind of things are something with which we breathe day and night. it's not something foreign. It's not that we are like some countries in some extremities of earth where the people are totally unaware of anything like that. Yes. We live with them continuously. So for us, it's not simply moral, political, or religious. It becomes an existential issue. By existential, I mean something that seemed to become an issue on which our human existence focus on.
No, I think
in
that's
in a vital
way. Yeah, that's beautifully put, Your Eminence. Beautifully put. I mean, Russians, Albanians, Serbians, the Ukrainians. We have forgotten maybe humanity.
You know how many clergy in Greece have been executed during the communist insurrection there? So there is a continuous thing.
So we know that, like you say, part of the DNA. It's a shame that humanity does not recognize that life is such a true gift and so precious.
And if I may also add something further.
Sure.
Christian, thank you for giving me the opportunity. There is the mentality of the Greek Orthodox, especially. I would extend it to the Balkans, but let's say it for the Greeks, because I know better about that. This mentality has to do not only with, let's say, Orthodoxy. It has to do with Hellenism as a cultural, educational, political, religious condition in which you have tremendous value of freedom. So you don't talk simply about human rights. You talk about the inalienable and impossible to violate issue of freedom for every human being. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was part of a, not one, but series of cultures. You can't have the philosophy that the classic Greek produced. You could not have the theatrical pieces by Sophocles, Euripides, and Aeschylus, and Aristophanes. You cannot have these kind of things without an adherence to freedom as guaranteeing, really, the rights that are embedded in the soul and mind of every human being. These were products of that kind of thing. So you have, in other words, civilizations, cultures, in which freedom is of some importance and specific value that is irreplaceable, and it carries with it whatever we call human rights on all levels. So there are in the Orthodox Christian conscience, the human rights element is much more deeper, stronger, wider than we normally do by talking about that.
And I would say, and correct me if you think I'm wrong, that could be the very reason that Archbishop Yakovos, knowing that DNA is within us, that's one of the reasons he went to Selma to stand there with Martin Luther King.
I would say 100%, because, and you know, it's important that Archbishop Yakovos came to the States from Turkey, living there as a minority, feeling the oppression of the minority by the state, and carrying this consciousness of what it is to be deprived of human rights and freedom of religion. So, for him, in spite of the fact that perhaps the general understanding would not be as it is today in terms of sensitivity for the issue in the community at that time, but he as an individual was fully aware of the value and the significance and the depth and the consequences of fighting for these human rights that are really basic items of identity of every human being.
Your Eminence, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you, Father Christian. Thank you for what you are doing through your really big service through your network, which is, as we know, all of us, is part of the activities of the Assembly of Orthodox Canonical Bishops in the United States. And your OCN network is a tremendous contribution to these values of human existence. And thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you, Your Reverence.